Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
If those previous generations of people whose knowledge was limited about the complexity of the creation, if they were held accountable and guilty, how much more accountable and guilty is the present generation? Because the Bible teaches this principle that greater knowledge brings greater responsibility.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian is continuing his study in the book of Romans. Join us as Pastor Brian begins in Romans chapter 1, verses 19 and 20, in the message titled, Without Excuse. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
A universal law of right and wrong means what? It means there is a lawgiver. The reason why everybody knows this, the reason why it's instilled there in the heart of every culture that's ever lived, is because God put it there. And that's what Paul is arguing here. Men suppress the truth in unrighteousness because that which may be known of God is manifest in them. And so we know, and even we ourselves can perhaps remember back, even as children, knowing that difference. And not simply because we were taught that. There were certain things that we might have been taught were right and wrong, but there were other things that we were never taught were right and wrong, but we just intuitively knew that they were wrong. Now, later in the second chapter, Paul's going to talk about this phenomena among the nations of the world outside of Israel who were living according to the moral law, even though they never had it. Paul said it's evidence that there's still a remnant of God's law written on the heart. So what that seems to infer is that when God created man, he created man with the law written in his heart. And what's happened is that sin has marred that. Sin has darkened that. So we don't see it as we would have seen it had we not sinned, but the traces of it are still there. So, manifested in them. But then he goes on, secondly, and he says, the knowledge of God's existence is also shown to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and divine nature. His invisible attributes. What attributes would those be? Well, of course, it would be the attribute of omnipotence, his power. His power is evidenced in the created world, but also his omniscience, his knowledge, his complete, thorough, total, absolute knowledge of all things that could possibly be known. That would be manifested as well. But also, there would be the manifestation, going back to what we just talked about a moment ago, there would be, to some extent, a manifestation of his holiness because of that sense within us of right and wrong. So, creation, and this is what Paul's pointing to here, obviously, creation means simply and obviously, at least it should be obvious, that there is a creator. Now, Paul, even in his day, says that people rejected the revelation of God through creation. It's not a new thing. It's not something that's just happened as a result of the development of modern science. It is something that happened all the way back, not just in apostolic times, but it's something that's happened all the way back in history. People looking at creation, and instead of concluding the obvious that there must be a creator, a creator to whom I'm accountable, and so forth. Men have rejected that. Last week, we had a conference, and one of the speakers, a friend of mine named Trent Douglas, he was, in the course of his message, he was telling this story. He had told me this story personally before, but again, hearing it again, it was just so fascinating. He does a lot of missions ministry in Africa. And Trent is one of those guys who, when he goes to Africa, he wants to go to the places where nobody's gone. So he's looking for people that nobody's ever been into contact with. So in the Sudan, he somehow gets connected with this tribe of people out in the bush that no missionaries have ever been to before. And so he's telling the story that as they come to them, and it's kind of humorous the way he tells it, because he says, you know, they're all naked and, you know, very primitive in their whole lifestyle and everything. So, you know, it's kind of humorous as he's kind of showing how he was communicating. But he says to them eventually, and he says, they are so primitive and their language is so, well, just such an isolated language. It took four translators to finally get out what they were trying to communicate back and forth. But what they were there to do, of course, was to share the gospel, to tell them about the true God. And so in talking to the chief of the tribe, this is what the chief told him. Again, no Bibles, no missionaries, nobody's ever come to them and brought them the gospel or in anything even close to it. But here's what the chief said. The chief said this: we look at the sky, we look at the sun, at night we look at the moon and the stars. We see the hills, the rivers, the trees, the animals. And this is what he said. He said, we know there is a God, but we don't know who he is or how to worship him. Amazing. Now, this guy, this chief, he has responded properly to God's witness of creation. This is the right response. This is the logical response. This is the obvious response. If there's a creation, there must be a creator. You've got to get a PhD to conclude the opposite of that. You got to get your brain twisted and tweaked with philosophy and just nonsense. I'm not saying anybody with a PhD is full of nonsense. Of course, there are many, you know, highly intelligent people and godly people with PhDs. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, you know, so here's this guy, this chief, out in the bush, and he knows, it's obvious, it's got to be a creator. But you go to Oxford or you go to Harvard or you go to somewhere like that, and, you know, oh, are you kidding? There's no such thing as a creator. And it's amazing that that's where things have come to. So Paul is telling us there's a witness in creation. There's always been a witness in creation. Nature and the complexity of living creatures and systems has been that voice all throughout history speaking to man of the fact that there's a creator, that there's an all-powerful, all-knowing, all-wise creator.
We'll return to Pastor Brian's message in just a moment. But first, we'd like to remind you to visit our website, backtobasicsradio.com. You can download a podcast of today's message or stream it for free. So take a moment and go to our website and be sure to sign up for Pastor Brian's weekly devotional. Now, let's continue with today's message.
Now, in previous generations to the modern era and the development of the scientific method and so forth, obviously people you know, understood a lot of things, but they didn't have the extent of knowledge that we have today about living systems, organisms, and things like that. They were, you know, to some degree restricted to, you know, just what the naked eye could see. But even being restricted to what the naked eye could see, God says that's plenty. It's plenty of evidence right there to work with. It's plenty of evidence to draw the proper conclusion that there's a creator. And of course, if you want to go back beyond the time when, you know, the microscope was developed and the telescope was developed and all of those kinds of things and all of the various discoveries that have transpired through modern science, if you go back, you still would have, you know, people understanding to some degree, you know, the eyeball maybe or the ear. But even then, their understanding was limited. Darwin's understanding of the eye was limited compared to what we know today, but he still admitted that the eyeball was a stumbling block to his evolutionary theory. So here's my point. If those previous generations of people whose knowledge was limited about the complexity of the creation, if they were held accountable and guilty, how much more accountable and guilty is the present generation? Because the Bible teaches this principle that greater knowledge brings greater responsibility. Greater knowledge sets a person up for a greater judgment. And I believe, and I think we can support it biblically, that the present generation of atheists and agnostics are going to be held more accountable than those prior to the development of modern science. Because now it's all uncovered. It's out there. It's clear. As one of the guys who was teaching this past weekend at the Veritas conference was saying, in regard to Darwin theorized that, you know, Darwin didn't bother to try to come up with biogenesis, how life itself began. They just sort of assumed that that was a fairly simple thing because, you know, it was just the development of a simple cell. And in Darwin's day, that's what they thought about a cell, that it was simple. But of course, today we know it's not simple at all. And his point was, you know, Darwin might even, you know, be a little more gracious to somebody like him because he just assumed simplicity, but he didn't have any way of you know, actually testing that. But today we know that there's no such thing. But even with the tremendous understanding that we have today of the radical complexity of living systems, we still have people drawing the same absurd conclusions. So today we know that life, living systems, and we'll reduce it to cells, are extremely complex, and there are those today that talk about specified complexity and irreducible complexity. Specified complexity refers to the fact that something could only have been specifically designed for the very thing that it does. It could not have randomly developed that way. The design is too specified. It's too specific. You don't get specific, detailed, complicated pieces of machinery accidentally. Those things have to be thought out. They have to be planned out. They have to be drawn up. And then the blueprint has to be followed. And since that is what you have on the molecular level, this specified complexity, to theorize that specified complexity is really not specified is just, it's irrational and nonsensical. And then there's irreducible complexity. In irreducible complexity, the reason why that is an important thing to understand in regard to evolution, because it basically, the cells basically tell you the exact opposite of what the evolutionary theory tells you. The evolutionary theory tells you that things developed in a process over long, long periods of time. Irreducible complexity says this thing had to come into existence complete. Because if you took one component of it away, it would no longer be what it is. It would no longer function. It would no longer do its job. So if you try to reduce the complexity, you lose the whole organism. So you can't have it developing throughout this long, long period of time. It just doesn't work that way. So this is what we know today. People know today that living systems are amazingly complicated. There's also something that we know today that, although to some extent a person in ancient times could have, you know, figured this out to a certain degree, but we have been able to see it on a much greater level, and that is what is known as the anthropic principle or the fine-tuning argument. And what that says is that the universe seems to have anticipated our arrival. We live in a universe that seems to have been prepared for us to be here. Anthony Flew, the man who became famous toward the end of his life for having converted from a life of atheism to being a theist. Sadly, to my knowledge, he never became a Christian. He died last year. But he wrote a book called There Is a God. And the subtitle was How the World's Most Notorious Atheist Changed His Mind. He writes about this anthropic principle. Listen to what he says. He says, imagine entering a hotel room on your next vacation. The CD player on the bedside table is softly playing a track from your favorite recording. The frame print over the bed is identical to the image that hangs over the fireplace at home. The room is scented with your favorite fragrance. You shake your head in amazement and drop your bags on the floor. You're suddenly very alert. You step over to the minibar, open the door, and stare in wonder at the contents, your favorite beverages, your favorite cookies and candy, even the brand of bottled water you prefer. You turn from the minibar then and gaze around the room. You notice on the desk it's the latest volume by your favorite author. You glance into the bathroom where personal care and grooming products are lined up on the counter, each one as if it was chosen specifically for you. You switch on the television. It is turned to your favorite channel. Chances are, with each new discovery about your hospitable new environment, you would be less inclined to think it was all a mere coincidence, right? You might wonder how the hotel managers acquired such detailed information about you. You might marvel at their meticulous preparation. You might even double check what all this is going to cost. But you would certainly be inclined to believe that someone knew you were coming. So he says this, the vacation scenario is a clumsy, limited parallel to the so-called fine-tuning argument. The recent popularity has highlighted a new dimension of the laws of nature. The more I examine the universe and study the details of its architecture, writes physicist Freeman Dyson, the more evidence I find that the universe, in some sense, knew we were coming. In other words, the laws of nature seem to have been crafted so as to move the universe toward the emergence and sustenance of life. This is the anthropic principle. So, you know, here's a guy who spends his entire life as an atheist, and not a closet atheist, but probably the most well-known atheist in the world. He was the one who gave the rest of the atheists their arguments against God. But it was these kinds of things, specified complexity, irreducible complexity, the anthropic principle, it was these kinds of things that caused him in the end to renounce his atheism. Now, like I said, you know, I don't know that he ever became a Christian. I've not heard that he did. He was surrounded by some believers. They shared extensively with him. So hopefully in the last moments, he opened his heart to the Lord. But the point is, this is what he said throughout the book. He said, I have always made it a point in life to follow the evidence wherever it leads. Regardless of where it goes, I'm going where the evidence leads. And basically what he said, he had to, in the end, renounce his atheism because the evidence brought him to the conviction that there had to be a creator. So this is what Paul is talking about here. Now, today, we have scientific atheism is probably the clearest example of this kind of thing that Paul's writing about here in verse 20. That looking at the creation, seeing the complexity, seeing the design and everything else, scientific atheism rejects the idea of a creator. In a very recent article following the a recent book that came out, Stephen Hawking. Interestingly, a man who a while back showed that matter is not eternal, and therefore there had to be a beginning, and that the beginning probably was very similar to what we read in the Bible. He and a few other guys are the ones that kind of, you know, really brought forth the and gave legitimacy, for those who believe it, to the Big Bang Theory. The only legitimate thing about the Big Bang Theory is it simply says that there's a point in time when everything came into existence. It did not exist eternally. So Hawking at one point said that, but now he's retracted that. And listen to what he says now. Recent advances in cosmology suggest the laws of gravity and quantum theory allow universes to appear spontaneously from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason there is something rather than nothing. Why the universe exists, why we exist.
Many of us pray with little heart. We mutter the usual prayer and leave with little expectation. But is this how Jesus taught us to pray? This month's resource for a donation of any amount is a book written by Manny Mill titled Radical Prayer, The Power of Being Bold and Persistent. In 2010, Manny's wife Barbara was in an automobile accident. This event caused him to ask, how can I treat God like a paramedic, calling him out only when there's an emergency? God used this as the impetus to begin to transform Manny's prayer life. When you pray consistently, persistently, and boldly for the hallowing of God's holy name, big things happen. Radical Prayer gives us a glimpse of the transformative and explosive power of praying in God's will, a power that takes place internally and manifests externally. Whether your prayer life is strong or in shambles, Radical Prayer will compel you to a life of bold, persistent, transformative, and expectant prayer. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com. To order this powerful resource, written by a man who has personally experienced the power of radical prayer. For a donation of any size to Back to Basics, we'll send you a copy of Manny Mills' book titled Radical Prayer, The Power of Being Bold and Persistent. The details for obtaining this month's book and all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll return tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Romans. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.